When I was in high school, my parents suggested I started learning Russian because I enjoyed languages. Gorbachev had just come into power. Russia was opening up. So I thought, wow, look, you know, the business opportunities that I'll have. And then I got to Amherst College and I took a survey course in Russian literature and realized that my real love of all things Russian was really focused on the arts and the culture. I spent my junior year at Moscow State University. And when I got to Russia, I could say a few things about Dostoevsky, but I couldn't get to the train station. My Russian was very abstract and academic, and I was sort of thrown into the cauldron, and I learned.
When did you first tackle War and Peace?
So I first discovered War and Peace, I really tackled War and Peace when I was a sophomore. Believe it or not, it was one of the first books that my professor assigned to us in a survey of Russian literature class. And I was fairly intimidated, like everyone was. This was a humongous novel with a big reputation behind it. But what was fascinating to me as I started reading this book, it was like eating candy in a way. These characters were so real and lifelike, and the situations were, even though it was 150 years ago in a totally different culture, they were utterly identifiable. I recognize who these characters were. I met people like that. And so Tolstoy's ability to capture life as people as they really are was extraordinary, and I was seduced, like many readers. But I would say beyond that, the aspect that really started to draw me in wasn't just the lifelikeness of his novels. It was the way in which his characters are grappling with the big questions, particularly a character by the name of Pierre Bezukhov, who was 20 years old at the beginning of War and Peace, and he's trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life and who he is and what's important to him, and he's thrown into a society that is rapidly changing because it's the era of the Napoleonic Wars and there's a lot of transformation taking place. And I resonated with this guy who was essentially my age, grappling with the same big questions. And that aspect of Tolstoy and of Russian literature in general, those accursed questions, that's what the Russians call them, accursed questions, has always been really important to me. And so much of my writing and thinking and teaching has been helping other people see the ways in which Russian literature can help them explore these questions.
Right. Now, what War and Peace is known for, I guess, is the sheer length of the work. How voluminous is this book?
In Russian, it's about 1,500 pages. It was published over a five-year period from 1865 to 1869, a four-year period, actually. Tolstoy had started working on it already in 1863. But it has 361 chapters, I think 566,000 words, almost 600 characters, and a number of these characters will disappear for hundreds of pages. Early readers of the novel didn't know who the hero was. People were baffled by this book because it was so not just large. They didn't know how large it was because it was published in installments. They didn't know that this was going to go on to become War and Peace, this massive tome. All they knew is that they were encountering a work that was very odd, very unlike the traditional European novels in its formal oddities, in the way in which, in all the characters, the intersecting plot lines. Later on in the book, Tolstoy would add essays on history and free will and fate, and he would just insert those right in the middle of the storyline. He threw in everything, including the French-made kitchen sink. 2.5% of the novel is in French. Russia's great national epic opens in French. But there was a reason behind these oddities. There were a number of reasons, but one of them was simply that Tolstoy wanted to write a book that really captured what he called life in its countless, inexhaustible manifestations. Life is in all of its complexity, human beings and all of their contradictions. And in order to do that, he needed to create a form of a book that would reflect that. And the nice, neat structure of the European novel wouldn't suffice.
So you've read it, obviously, many times in mm-hmm. both English and Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And does it make a difference when you read it in Russian?
Yes. I mean, Tolstoy, it always makes a difference. You know, Tolstoy is a very quirky writer. He's got this combination of elegance and awkwardness, which most English translations do not capture. He'll repeat words multiple times in a matter of a couple sentences. He'll repeat entire phrases. some of that was sloppy, some of that was intentional. But one of the big challenges of a translator is to decide, do you clean up Tolstoy's work or do you let it all hang out? And most of the translations in the past have tried to clean it up. The Richard Pevere and Larissa Volokhonsky translation comes along, and they sort of let some of the awkwardness show. And there's debate about whether that's the right thing or not the right thing. But certainly any English translation is not going to fully capture the Russian. And also when I read it in Russian, it puts me in a different mental space. I've spent so much time in Russia that I think in Russian. So when I'm thinking in Russian or reading in Russian, I'm back in Russia. I'm in that place. I remember the sights that I've seen at Tolstoy's estate at Yasne Polyana, where I've spent many, many weeks over the past several years wandering among the, you know, 1,000-acre estate. I wrote an entire chapter in Give War and Peace a Chance at Yasne Polyana. So, you know, that's just part of the joy of knowing the original. But the final thing I'll say is the nice thing about Tolstoy is that he is one of those writers that does not lose a whole lot in translation. You're not going to get all the subtleties and the nuances, of course, but he wrote with an intended directness and a simplicity that most translators are, for better or worse, able to capture.
And how many translations would you guess there are into English? Are there quite a few or a handful?
I don't actually have the exact number. I think right now in print there are probably 5 translations, but some of those other translations that are out of print will be coming back in print, because next year is the 150th anniversary of the beginning of the publishing of War and Peace. So all in all, there have been, I'm pretty sure, well over 10 attempts to translate this novel.
Have you been tempted?
No.
I'm not going to ask why. I think it might be self-evident. And how many times would you guess you've read the book?
About 15 times.
Wow. And will you read it again?
Yeah. I probably read it once every couple of years. And that's interesting, because every time I read it, it's a new book. That's one of the things that's so profound about War and Peace or any great work of literature, is that it grows with you, it changes with you. I respond to different aspects of the novel. And in fact, when I was reading the book in 2008, I was reading it at a time in my life that I made some connections that directly inspired Give War and Peace a Chance. It was a time the newspapers were reporting about the financial crisis, and I'll spare you the details. I don't spare the reader the details. I share with them what happened in my life. But I went through, and my family and I went through a crisis. And all of a sudden, War and Peace became a new book for me. I realized something that I hadn't seen quite so clearly before, that this is a book about a society of people going through a time of crisis. It takes place during the Napoleonic Wars, ultimately describes Napoleon's invasion of Russia, and people's lives are being turned upside down. Institutions are being turned upside down. And one of the fundamental questions that characters have to grapple with is, how do I find fulfillment and even happiness in troubled times? War and Peace became a very personal book to me, but it also became a very timely book. I realized that this is a book for our time, and I needed to write another book about Tolstoy. I was already finishing at that time my first book on Tolstoy. And this other book is Give War and Peace a Chance.
So you're dealing with a bunch of students who are living in a very different time in terms of the instantaneousness of communication, the limited communication that mm-hmm. goes on, the texting, the tweeting, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Is it difficult to get these students into the right mindset to read this book? Do they have the attention span?
I think if you grab their attention, they have the attention span. And so much of my own teaching, not just of War and Peace, but of Russian literature in general, has been focused on how do you make these books relevant? How do you bring these books into the lives of readers? And that includes my students. So I've honed a kind of method of teaching that really encourages students to find their personal connection with these characters, and not be ashamed of that, and to think about that, and to think about whether they agree with the decisions the characters made, whether the characters' life journey resonates with anything in them, what discoveries that they made about themselves by reading this book. And that energizes students, because that's personal, that's relevant. And I have found that that approach sort of overcomes the obstacles, the natural obstacles that we have in today's world to getting students to read.
Do you feel like there's some resonance in connection with what's happening in Russia and the Ukraine now? I mean, it's a really tumultuous time once again for Russia, and I'm wondering if the students are talking about that or you're thinking about that in connection with the book?
Well, I am thinking about that. Actually, next week I have a piece coming out in the Daily Beast on that very subject. The working title is called Russia's True Greatness, kind of a provocative title in these times. But one of the points that I make is that the story of War and Peace, the story of Napoleon's invasion of Russia, is a very powerful narrative in Russian history. It has strong resonance among Russians, the self-image of a country under siege. And that's not just Napoleon. That goes all the way back to the Mongolian invasions, and more recently it goes back to Hitler's invasion of 1941. And it's no coincidence that Soviet soldiers were given copies of War and Peace to read in their barracks while fighting against the Nazis in 1941. Well, that story of a country under siege can be a source of great national pride, but it also can be a source of great hubris and arrogance. And I think in the case of Putin, what it has done is he has used this idea as a justification for his own, I think, arrogance and his own need to reassert Russian superiority in the world. But that's not the message of War and Peace. Putin, ironically, comes closest to the character of Napoleon, the invader, not the invaded. The real message of greatness, of heroism, which Tolstoy communicates in War and Peace, is embodied in the Russian commander-in-chief Kutuzov, who is a very humble, simple man, a shrewd man, but an entirely selfless man, not self-aggrandizing at all. One of the great quotes from the novel that I love is, "There is no greatness where there is no goodness, simplicity, and truth." And without getting too in-depth into Putin's life and trying to psychoanalyze him, I would think if he would go back and reread War and Peace through this lens, it might give him a different sense, a different direction. And it might inspire Russians to rediscover a sense of their own national greatness that doesn't require an invader, that doesn't require the image, the self-image of a country under siege. I can throw out one other interesting little Tolstoy connection with Crimea. Tolstoy actually got his start as a writer in the 1850s when he was serving as a soldier, not only in the Caucasus, but also in Crimea. He actually fought in the Crimean War in the 1850s. Against the combined forces of the Turks, the Brits, and the French. So he was part of that whole historical movement. And he wrote a series of tales about those experiences, or based on those experiences, called the Sevastopol Tales, in which he exhibits enormous patriotism. He was incredibly proud of the Russian troops, so much so, and in fact, even the Tsar had publicized the stories, had them translated into French. But he also starts to develop his own unique brand of politics, which is that he was a patriot, but he was not a nationalist. He loved his people, but he did not love his government. In fact, he predicted that Russians would lose the Crimean War because the soldiers were, he said, a, quote, mob of oppressed, disciplined slaves. They were fighting for what he thought was a corrupt government. So there again, it's another example of a kind of pride that doesn't have to move in the direction of chauvinism or nationalism.
One of the themes, of course, in Anna Karenina is the status of women in a culture, and I'm wondering if that is also a theme in War and Peace.
It was not as direct of a question as it was in the 1870s when he wrote Anna Karenina, but the so-called woman question, which today we would call as sort of the rise of the feminist movement, the Russian version of the feminist movement, was already beginning to develop in the 1860s. And connected to that was a pattern of divorce and families falling apart that Tolstoy was very concerned about. In fact, he was working on War and Peace just after he'd gotten married and started having a family of his own, and he was watching friends getting divorced. He was watching what he saw as kind of a rupture in the fabric, the social fabric that was sort of defined by the family unit. And so in War and Peace, he celebrates the specialness of families. And the novel, the epilogue ends with, after having gone through all the turmoil of war, multiple families come together and live, because ultimately I think you thought that that's what life was all about. There's all these large forces and people invading your country, and all these things happen, but at the end of the day, it's you and the people closest to you that you live every day with that, you know, define your world. And I have a whole chapter on family in my book. And the other thing he says about family, which is important, which I think anyone can relate to, and you don't have to be a liberal or conservative, it doesn't matter, it's the idea that family can provide an incredible source of solace in times of trouble. And that's one of the lessons that many of the characters learn in this novel, particularly during the time of Napoleon's invasion. One example that comes to mind is the young Natasha Rostova. She has just lost someone very dear to her, and she's wandering around the house, wallowing in her own self-pity, annoyed that no one else can appreciate what she's going through. Everything is so humdrum. Don't you guys understand what I'm suffering through? And then her family gets the news that her own brother has been killed in battle. And she sees her mother sobbing and her father stumbling. And all of a sudden, it's as if an electric shock goes through her entire body, and she suddenly becomes an adult. And she realizes that her parents need her as much as she needs them, and that they need to bear this suffering that they're going through together.
Do today's students relate to this family theme?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they may not necessarily agree with Tolstoy's point of view, but certainly family is an issue that college-age students, high school students think about and are concerned about. A number of them, you know, our divorce rate is, what, around 50%? So a number of them have personal experience with broken families, and they bring very personal experience to this question.
Why did you want to do a book like this? What was your goal?
One goal was very practical, that War and Peace is this humongous, intimidating classic of world literature. It's one of those books. Mark Twain once said that the definition of a classic is a book that everyone wants to have read, but no one wants to read. And I have talked to so many people and students who have said they cannot get through War and Peace. All those characters, all those Russian names, all the other oddities that I talked about. And so I thought this was a shame, because this book is so rich and so full of relevant wisdom that people have to read it, or at least I wanted to bring a book. I wanted to write a book that takes this intimidating masterpiece and brings it down to a very human, relatable level, but also provides a guide to readers through the book. So as you're reading my book, you're actually moving through the plot of War and Peace. And so even as I'm talking about the themes, the human, the big questions about love and death and happiness and family, I'm also taking readers on a journey with the characters. And I interweave stories of Tolstoy's own biography into that narrative, because so many of the ideas came directly out of his own personal experiences. Interweave my own story, my own 25-year journey. Initially, I intended this book to be a book for people who know nothing about Tolstoy, maybe have heard of War and Peace, maybe think it has something to do with the John Lennon song, but this book essentially distills War and Peace down for those readers. And initially it was intended as a standalone book. Everything you need to know about War and Peace and Tolstoy is in Give War and Peace a Chance. But what I've found is that many readers have read this book and now they're inspired to go read the novel itself. And I'm also aware of people who are using my book as a guide that they're going to read alongside War and Peace as well. And they do that either in classes or in book groups. And there's also a guide to characters' names and how to pronounce them. There's a chronology of Tolstoy's life. And there's also some suggestions for further readings. So the book can be used either as a standalone book. You can read it before you read War and Peace, after you read War and Peace, or while you're reading War and Peace.
Did you find that there was a ready market for this, or was it a tough sell to the publishing world?
Anything is a tough sell to the publishing world today, but I was actually quite surprised. I didn't know how difficult it would be to sell this book, but when I started to do the research about how many readers there are out there who are interested in the classics or interested in the Russian classics, when I draw on all of my experiences over the years of people telling me, I cannot get through War and Peace, I started to realize that there's a much larger market of people out there than I ever suspected. And apparently Simon and Schuster agreed because they bought the book.
So having finally completed this, how long did it take you, by the way? And how did you go about putting this book together? Was it just a matter of sitting with the work and thinking about your own experiences? Did you have to travel or talk to anybody?
This book probably was written even before I started writing over a 25-year period. Remember, I had been with Tolstoy for many, many years before I even started this book. So fortunately, there was not a lot of more research I had to do. I had already published another book about Tolstoy before this one. But what I had to do, the most important thing that I had to do, aside from the structural questions of how am I going to structure this book, is really get clear with myself about what each of these different themes means to me. So some of the chapters were very difficult to write, like the family chapter. Because in order to write authentically about what Tolstoy said about family, I had to be honest with myself about what I think about family or love. And I had to confront a lot of my own failings as well as my successes. So in that sense, it was a very personally and emotionally challenging book. And the other important decision was it had to be an engaging book. If a book about War and Peace does not engage readers, then I've entirely failed in my task. So from the very get-go, it has to be move, it has to tell a good story, it has to be lively, and I worked really, really hard. I did not treat this as an academic writing exercise. It was important to me. So I probably went through 15 drafts to get it just right.
And it is for the layman. It's not, as you say, an academic, not a scholarly work in that way.
Yeah, it's entirely for the layman, although scholars have gotten a lot out of it as well because it's a very different look at a writer that they know. It's not at all typical scholarly writing. It's got a very different feel, a very different audience.
We could probably talk for hours about who Tolstoy was and what made him able to sort of bring all this wisdom together in a single work. What would you say about Tolstoy to someone who's curious about this guy and why he was so great?
The way he was able to write this book is not just because he was great, but because he was incredibly flawed. And that's a very important point. Tolstoy was a man of contradictions. He was a man full of flaws. In his 20s, he had a voracious sexual appetite. He fathered an illegitimate child to a local peasant girl. He had a gambling addiction. He lost the house of his own birth on his estate in a night at the card table. He went on and started to have serious marital problems later on. He ran away from home at the age of 82. He left his wife a note saying, "Thank you for 48 years of marriage, but I cannot stay. Our differences are irreconcilable." And it was very tragic. He died in a train station. But he brought all of this to his characters, all of his flaws, all of his mistakes. And that's what makes his characters so real and human and relatable. If he was just a great man, he would be an incredibly boring writer. But he's interesting because he's like us. And unlike us, he simply had an enormous imagination and the talent and the skill to tell a really powerful story with lots of characters and a fascinating storyline.
You mentioned that it was initially serialized. Was it in a newspaper, or what form did it take in the beginning?
It was serialized in a journal called the Russian Herald. At that time in Russia, in the 1860s, most novels were initially published in installment form in what were called the thick journals. And the thick journals were journals that had social writing, political writing, fiction. In fact, in 1866, if you were a subscriber to the Russian Herald, you would have been reading two novels side by side, one by Leo Tolstoy, the novel that would become War and Peace. It had a different name then. And another novel by a writer named Fyodor Dostoevsky called Crime and Punishment. So imagine living at that time and being a subscriber to one of those journals. But the journals is where these thick journals is where fiction was published, and it's where the debates of the day took place. Scholars and philosophers and psychologists, and then eventually a book would be published in book form after it had first appeared in serial form.
So it was a bit of a soap opera. I mean, in the sense that the narrative went on and people were tuning in next week to find out what happened.
Yeah, and you sort of get that sense when you read the book that part of the reason the Russian novels are so great is because just from a sheer storyline perspective, they had to keep readers' attention. You know, every 100 pages or so, or fewer than 100 pages, there had to be a cliffhanger and you had to want more. And if you were an original Russian reader, you would simply have to wait several months to get that more. But now you get to get it right away. So I do think that partly explains why the Russian writers weren't just great philosophically, but also they were forced to tell really good stories that kept readers engaged.
Yeah. So what's next for you? Having written this book, do you have something else in mind?
I do. So I have a program at the University of Virginia. It's a course called Books Behind Bars, and the whole name is Books Behind Bars, Life, Literature, and Leadership. And it's a class in which my undergraduate students go into a juvenile correctional center and lead book discussions with incarcerated youth about Russian literature. And my next book is about that. And I think the working title is Crime and Enlightenment, Reading the Great Russians Behind Bars.
Title is extremely important, is it not? I mean, not only for Tolstoy, but for you, especially in the modern book market, to come up with a clever title like Give War and Peace a Chance.
And I think it has to be not just clever, it has to really communicate something of substance about the book, not just the play on Give Peace a Chance. It's the idea that our wisdom and our insights and our growth come as much during times of war and chaos as they do during times of peace. And in fact, in Russian, the word for peace has an alternative meaning. It also means world, cosmos. So when a Russian is hearing the title War and Peace, they're also subconsciously hearing war in the world, as if to suggest that life is a battle, life is struggle. And if we are going to find our peace, we have to find it within that reality. It's not out there in some abstract realm, in some distant realm. It's right down here, in our messy world, in our imperfect lives. Happiness, fulfillment, peace are found there in the middle of the war.
Sounds like a perfect note on which to wrap things up. Thank you very much. That was well said.
Thank you.